Okay, welcome to the latest edition of the Northern Affinity podcast and the Teach Me How episodes that we're doing. I'm absolutely delighted to say that I'm joined by Robin today. So thanks for joining me, Robin.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's fab to be here. I'm excited.
And I'm really interested in where this conversation is going to go, actually. And we're going to talk all about change, basically, and making it happen is the general theme. But I'm sure, like a lot of these podcasts, will go off at all sorts of different areas, and we'll kind of just see how it goes. But I think really importantly to kind of start the conversation, be just love to know a little bit more about you and what you do, Robin, and then that can kind of start our conversation. So floor open to you. Tell us a bit about you, and we'll go from there.
Okay, I'll tell you at a high level what I do, and then how I got there, and then see where that sort of takes us. So above all, I do change work. So I help people make change. So change for themselves and change for other things outside of themselves as well. Broadly speaking, it has three flavors. It's internal work, so emotional intelligence, mindset, work like that. And then there is executive sort of coaching, so senior leaders or business owners, helping them make change for themselves or how they engage with their business. So their communication styles, their leadership styles, how they handle stress and conflict, how they make decisions, things like that. And then the other aspect is more of a done for you. So I sort of trained as a management consultant. So sometimes I can actually do the change for people as well. A lot of the time that would focus quite a lot on culture change, I think, or organizational change, the shape of the organization. So the strategy maybe, or the organizational structure, or how we deal and engage with the people in that space as well. So that's what I do for people. And it's usually for, like say, executives or senior leaders and business owners as well. That's where I had the most value in that space. How did I get into that? I was working in the IT space, and then got into a leadership position. And I was just fortunate to have lots of opportunities to learn and grow, and then put on lots and lots of courses and other things like that. So you sort of accumulated, and I became less technical and more people focused. And then when it comes about people, it was always about taking them to a different place, a place where they currently were not and they wanted to be. And that was it. And I love it.
No, I'm looking forward to this conversation because I think kind of the next question really is what do you mean by change? Because I think it's quite a good point to start, because, and you kind of did it in your answer there, that, you know, you kind of use change in quite a lot of different contexts and a lot of different circumstances, and it can mean different things, can't it? And it can be something that can be relatively minor, from, I don't know, changing your aftershave, I'm trying to think of something really minor there, to essentially changing your life.
That could be a big decision. There's so many to choose from. Yeah, okay. So, right, the way that I think about change is that there is sort of the content of change, and then there's the structure of change. So there might be many different elements of content that you might want to change, but the structure is broadly the same, which is you're currently in a situation, circumstances, a place where you are, but you don't want what you currently have. You want a different answer. And sometimes you know what the answer is, and sometimes you don't, and we need to work that out first. But ultimately, it's you are in a situation, a circumstance, or something like that, and you want it to be different. And it's how we go from that point A to that point B, ultimately. And it's what I do mostly is facilitate and guide that change. And it starts very clearly with, well, let's get clear on what we do want and what we want to create. And then from there, we create a strategy. So what makes the most sense and how to get there. And then I bring in other component parts of it. So sometimes talking about identity, so who you need to be as an individual, who you need to become, or how you're currently experiencing yourself around that. Then we talk about mindset and emotional intelligence. We talk about habits, systems, routines that you sort of need to create in there. We talk about the skills you might need to develop. We then talk about the things which are in the way. It's what I call subtraction. So it's like a subtractive psychology approach, which is moving everything else which gets in the way, which a lot of the time is things like limiting self-beliefs and ideas about yourself. It could be comparisons that you're making. It could be people, places, things. It could be anything really which is getting in the way of change. And I find that a much more effective way. So it's not always adding in new stuff. I sort of work on the basis that we've got so many resources already internal that we just need to subtract what gets in the way of us making the change happen.
Do you find in what you do that a lot of people are in a position, they know they need something, but they don't kind of know they need change, if that makes sense? They don't know what's help they need. So to kind of do that can almost be the first step to, for them. It's a bit like that, you know, what's the first kind of way of identifying your issue is understanding what your issue is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I'd say a lot of the time that's 80% of the work. And one of the things that I do often that I believe really helps my clients is simplify the complexity that the client sort of lives in. So there's sort of, they might have lots of competing ideas, lots of things sort of competing for airtime inside the mind, and they're not quite sure exactly what it is that they want to create. They're not quite sure how to navigate it all. It can feel very overwhelming. And to some extent, you can end up being sort of paralyzed by all of that. So one of the first things I do is once I sort of listen is play it back and really simplify it in the most succinct way to bring clarity. That's what I call it, sort of clarity to the person first. Because once you've got that point of clarity, everything else seems so much easier. And oftentimes, just in the onboarding conversation, when I'm trying to work out what it is that the client really wants help with, as we get towards the end, I can play it back and it can be so succinct and simple and clarifying for them, is that sometimes like, I think I'm okay for now, actually. Now I've got that point of clarity, I think I can do a couple more steps on my own. And that happens sometimes. And then they come back when they've sort of got three or four steps in, and then they're sort of like, okay, I'm stalled again. What can we do next?
Funny enough, that was kind of going to be my next question almost. I imagine you get people who say, you know, I kind of, some people don't know what they need changing, but also people kind of the opposite of that is, I need to change. It might be my work life. Should we use that as an example? Do you often find that once you kind of drill down into it and ask those questions, it's actually something else? It's not what they think the issue is?
Yeah, that happens quite a lot, really. So one of the things that I'm always interested in, I sort of ask sort of like, change for what purpose? Do you know, for what purpose are you wanting this? What's on the other side of it for you? Now, there's different answers depending if you're in a sort of like, if you're talking about yourself and personal things, or you're talking about your business. But ultimately, I think almost always it's because people want to feel different. You know, ultimately, everybody is looking for a feeling. You know, if I was to ask you or anybody else that was listening, you know, what do you want most in your life? What are you after most? And most people would say to be happy. Now, those that say something else, when you ask them, well, what will that get you? We usually get to, well, it'll just make me happy. So ultimately, we're looking for an experience and a feeling of being sort of happy. But what we think is going to create that happiness for us is not always what it seems. And part of my role, especially when we're doing deeper inner work, is to sort of help them realize, you know, like how their happiness and experience is being created. Do you know what's contributing to their dissatisfaction or unhappiness? And something else like that, because it's sometimes what they think is going to create the answer is not always what will create it. And my job is to try to see what's on the other side of the goal and see whether I can find a shortcut to getting there.
Yeah. And do you find that up to the last, 4 years or so now have been quite such a life-changing, culture-changing world, with obviously COVID being the main element of that. And I'd be interested to know, I think it's my conversations, I often find a lot of people, it's made them kind of look, kind of hold up a mirror to themselves a little bit. And whether they did it straight away when the pandemic, or they're doing it now, 3-4 years later, do you think we've all maybe looked at ourselves more in the last few years since kind of what happened with COVID?
Yeah, I think that is true. And while COVID was pretty crappy for everyone, I think in this space it's done us a real sort of service. I have this sense that we get so busy and so caught up in our lives and our thinking, and sort of it's what I call the hamster wheel. It's sort of like you just sort of like, you know, you just keep going round and round and round, you know. It made everybody get off the hamster wheel for a little bit of time and just stop and look around and actually question, you know, what they were doing, why they were doing it, what was really making a difference. And it challenged loads of assumptions as well. Do you know, like we couldn't all work from home and be productive and things like that. Do you know, it made us look at ourselves and the world and question it and stop taking everything for granted, do you know, or working on our assumptions. Do you know, it made us challenge and check our assumptions. And I have a sort of operating model, it's sort of like a belief thing, which is, you know, people do what makes sense to them. You know, ultimately people do what makes sense to them. So if something else starts to make sense, they'll do that too. But to see that, you've got to stop and notice. And that's what I think sort of COVID did for us.
Yeah, and I would definitely count the reason I asked that question, I count myself within that kind of, and it's kind of taken a little bit of time, but I think, well, the thing for me, I think you're quite right. You know, the first thing you think of is what do you want? I want to be happy. Well, what makes you happy, I guess, is the next bit on what does that. And I think I've realized in quite recent times, for me, simplicity is a thing that really makes me happy, that I like having a real, and that's one of the things about COVID, wasn't it? As much as especially in the early few months, the rules were very strict and we couldn't do this and we could, but I would openly admit there was something about that I quite enjoyed, that I've got nothing. I haven't really got much to do apart from get up, do a bit of work, do some homeschooling with a little one, and just a really simple life. I think, because I think things have got so complicated, so things, technology and all this kind of stuff has really impacted lives in the last, what, 20 years or so, more than ever. And almost the simplicity. Does that make sense?
It does to me. I'm all for simple everything. Do you know, I can't remember, is it Leonardo da Vinci that said simplicity is the ultimate in sophistication?
That sums me up perfectly then.
Perfect. Go with it. Me too. I love it. I listen. Yeah. So I think we have to ask ourselves, what are we doing all the change for? Because everything seems to be going faster and faster, you know, and it feels so challenging to keep up. And then everything we see, you know, and we hear is somebody doing something else, another piece of technology comes out, there's this change and that change, and trying to keep up, and it's exhausting, really trying to keep up with all this stuff. But when you sort of slow down and notice, sort of like get off the hamster wheel and say, for what purpose? Well, to make you happy, probably. And happiness comes from the most simplest sort of things. So it's, yeah, and that's the bit that I was saying for sort of noticing, really. You've got to get off that hamster wheel long enough and just notice that you don't want these things, you don't want to be doing it differently, this is not right for you. Do you know, and ultimately say, I want a different answer.
Absolutely. So to kind of, I guess, take the step forward with that, you know, let's assume I've come to you and we've gone through whatever discussions we've gone through, and we've got to a point where I have all, or we've realized between us that simplicity matters to me. What kind of things, and obviously you can use other examples rather than simplicity because everyone's different, but what kind of things can we actually do, you know, going to the title of this conversation, make that happen? Because it's okay to say that, isn't it? And to say that I want X, Y, and Z, but the reality of like any situation is making the change. So what kind of things do we need to do to make that work?
Okay. So there's two answers that are sort of surfacing in me straight away. The first thing is a question that I always ask everybody, which is, what's in the way of simplicity? So if we're using simplicity as the example, what's in the way
of simplicity happening. So I'm operating on the basis that we are happy and fulfilled beings by default. That's our default setting. If you look at all children, they are happy, playful, joyful. They don't hold on to problems and stuff like that. That's the default setting for all humans. But we've layered on all kinds of ideas and assertions and assumptions about who we are and how the world works. And it's this conditioning which creates the problem. So I ask, what's in the way? Because it's the conditioning. If we can start to strip back some of that, then you can realize what you're looking for was always there all along. So that's the first part. If I was to say there was an underlying theme, though, this is my second sort of response part, it would be absolutely everything we will do and everything we're feeling is an element and construct of the mind. So there's nothing that we are ever going to experience. There is nothing that we're ever going to create or do in the world. There's no amount of feeling that's not going to have the mind involved. We need to understand how the mind works. If we don't understand what's going on between our ears, how it works, what's true, what's not true, you know, where our feelings and experiences coming from, then we're just going to feel like we're being pulled from pillar to post. So while lots of people come to me for very clear, what I would think of practical change, a lot of what the work I will do with them is to help them understand a little bit more about what's going on in the mind. Now, we can do that in very direct, let me teach you an understanding sort of way, or let me teach you something that you might not have realized, but also just the questioning. Mm-hmm. You know, it encourages people to look inside and check the validity of some of the things that they're operating on. You know, how much is an assumption? You know, how much is relatively true? You know, true just for you, just in this moment? And how much is things like absolutely true? You know, true for everyone all the time, sort of thing.
Yeah. So
two things there.
So I was thinking when you were talking then about the type of things that maybe stop us changing, and obviously feel free to add some of them yourself. My kind of gut feeling is, and I'm again going a little bit on my personal circumstances, is that a lot of it is maybe going against what should we say social norms. So, for example, you know, we all think that we want a better job, a better car, a better house, live in a better location, whatever it might be. Those are the things that we want, and I know they're things rather than feelings, but you know, that's always a thing we should be striving for. That's society tells us, and that's the way kind of the education system goes. Is there a thing for people in terms of getting to that point of being happy, going back to that actually accepting that that's not the thing that matters to you? Is that something you see quite commonly in people?
That's usually what happens as the end result of working with me, more than anything. On the basis of being able to show people how their mind works in a different way. So I guess there's two things at play. Going against societal norms in the past was probably not a good idea. You'd get kicked out of the tribe, the clan, whatever, and surviving on your own would be hard work. Probably not a good idea to not conform. But that's not the world that we live in. But we have been conditioned. You know, and our parents are conditioned and their parents are conditioned, and we get societal conditioning and national conditioning and things like that in our culture that conditions us to think a certain set of ways. Also, we get confused between, and this is a mind thing, between what correlates in our experience and what causes certain things. So it's the equivalent of an assumption. So we assume certain things. So for instance, you know, I had a wonderful croissant this morning for breakfast with a beautiful coffee. That made me happy. So that's that's what it looks like. But there's actually a deeper thing that's going on with the mind, which actually shows you that's not what actually created the happiness. It was something else, But it we just get confused between correlation and causation. And that's what most of us are operating on. We are assuming what got us to this point is what's going to get us to another point. So we perpetuate ways of sort of being and doing things in the world, hoping to get more and more of the same. And you can see that the extreme circuses when people have got all the stuff of success, all the artifacts of success, all the, you know, the house, the car, the big watch, the fine shoes and clothes and all those sorts of things, yet they're still not happy. Yet if you ask yourself a very simple question, if stuff made you happy, why wouldn't you be happy when you got your first stuff? So just by using logic alone, you have to appreciate there's got to be something else going on, and that's in the mind.
Absolutely, and it's the thing, isn't it? We often see that with people who've achieved everything, it might be in sport or music or arts or whatever, and you know they've earned loads of money and they've got the big house, and then you know we hear some really sad stories about those areas, and I think a lot of people struggle to understand that because they think that's probably what they want, but. I think my experience, and I don't know if this is a thing as you get older, that you get to that one thing and then it's almost like forgotten, and then the next thing, and you can never get, it's this thing we all go for, but you can never actually get there. There's never like an end point, which is fine for a while because, you know, if it drives your motivation and things like that, but it probably gets to a point of not understanding that when your point, when you've achieved loads, but you've still not achieved everything.
Yeah. What would you say? It's from a psychology perspective, it is called hedonic adaption. Okay. So you sort of adapt to the current situation, circumstances, the thing, and then it sort of dissipates. And that's what keeps us sort of like on the hamster wheel. We're just assuming, oh, this was not the thing. This was not the thing. So we keep looking for the bigger, better, finer, more interesting, more exciting. We're always sort of looking for another experience, another substance, another relationship, something to sort of create that thing. But the truth of all of this, though, is that happiness is more innate than people realize. So it's more of a default setting, but it's the it's what thinking and comparisons do. So when we're comparing ourselves, that creates you could almost call it like a tension or a stretching of us, and that creates the experience that we label as unhappy. And then when we get the thing, that comparison disappears. It sort of collapses in on itself, and then we feel happy. And then as a result, we conclude that what made us happy was getting the thing. But it was the absence of the comparison in this instance that left you back in your default state of being happy.
Yeah, and it's interesting you use the word comparison because my mind straight away went to, and this is kind of going slightly off topic but not so much, is social media. I think that obviously is, you know, what roughly over the last 20 years or so has kind of constantly shoving in comparisons down our throats. Yeah. That we maybe didn't have, and that's why we're always maybe looking for the other thing. There's obviously a lot of, I've seen lots of things and read and heard things about platforms like Instagram, for example, and how young people have been affected by that because they see somebody else, you know, going on bigger holidays or in nicer cars or in bigger houses or whatever it is, and they're always trying to achieve that, and that's caused them to be unhappy.
Yeah, very much. I see that all the time. So by our very nature, the way that with mind works anyway, is just by its default, to make sense of the world, you've sort of got to make a judgment. Oh, this is one of them, this is good, that's bad, that's safe, that's not safe. You've got to do some level of activity to keep yourself safe. But that activity in itself is part of judgments and comparisons and things like that. So you end up doing that by default. But then if you internalize it and make it mean something about you as a person, then that creates that feeling of being dissatisfied, not being good enough, you know, unfulfilled. And the more you are aware of, and if you think about like social media, the more opportunity you've got to do that. So there's lots of times when I put people on social media fasts or news fasts to just stop doing that. Just like give it a few days. You know, once you get over the feeling of not knowing and that level of discomfort of not knowing and what's going on, you feel so much freer because you're not doing that comparison. When you're not comparing yourself, you generally feel quite happy.
No, it's true. And I was thinking there actually. So when I very first started this podcast, we used to do it in a slightly different format. And one of the questions I used to ask everybody, so it was kind of the same set of three or four questions we'd ask. And one of them was around their aspirations, essentially. What do they want to achieve? And, you know, well, obviously we were talking in a business context, and most people, generically speaking, the answer was, I want to build my business. I want to grow it. I want to employ staff. I want to build it to, you know, have the life that I want, except, you know, that's how, generally speaking, that was roughly what the answer was. However, one person replied to me saying, I want to continue to be as happy as I am now. And I might have slightly misworded, but essentially that's what she said. And I remember almost, I didn't really follow that up really in the questions, and because it kind of stuck with me afterwards, and I was quite surprised by that answer. And I remember it now, probably 2 or 3 years ago, whenever it was now, we did that. Like, I thought that was one of the best answers I've ever had. And I thought, I'd love it if everyone answered that way. That would be an amazing place to be, wouldn't it, if we had everybody thinking like that?
Yeah, definitely. And do you know what I would encourage everybody that's sort of listening on this? It's just to ask themselves, if whatever you're doing is not ultimately to make you happy, what are you doing it for? What are you doing it for? I think everything that we do, whether or not we are consciously aware of it or not, is all to make us happy or to insulate us from something that we think will make us unhappy. You know, the classic, if I don't keep, you know, if I take my foot off the accelerator, then this thing will stall. And then that would mean all kinds of catastrophe and all that thinking that we'll go through. So we keep our foot firmly down and we'll just keep pushing ourselves and burning ourselves out. But it's ultimately for the same thing, just to be happy.
Yeah, it's interesting. You kind of mentioned the difference between being happy and not being unhappy. My brain always goes back to the Maslow hierarchy of needs for that. Like the first one is I can't remember what's it called. I can't remember. I remember self-actualization is the top one. It's roof over your head, isn't it? Being able to
physical, practical sort of things. Yeah. First and foremost. Yeah.
I think it's quite interesting, isn't it? And that's kind of almost the financial side of things is. Not having the position where you can pay for your food and your shelter is going to make you unhappy. But having those things doesn't necessarily make you happy. It's just having the basic, or what we deem the basics anyway.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that's where ultimately the problem comes. We get these basics in place and then we think, oh, we can improve on this. We can have a better house, better clothes, whatever. So we sort of move towards improvement, but then we get confused thinking that, well, more improvement or more things will create more happiness, but it doesn't work like that. That's a limitation of the mind and the way that the mind's sort of functioning that makes us believe that, but that's not true. That's the whole idea of what got us here is not going to get us there. That's why we have celebrities and all kinds of rich people with all kinds of sort of challenges, because stuff doesn't make you happy. There's no that, you know, how can an object external to you change your internal system except by your thinking about it? There is no way you're thinking about it that changes how you feel, not the object itself.
Absolutely not. It's a really fascinating chat this, Robin, and I guess one thing I'd really like to ask you about is around, so if someone's listening to this and want, you know, kind of want to start that journey, I guess, of change, because I assume it is a journey. It doesn't we can't just kind of snap our fingers and change the change happen. What kind of things could someone listen to do this today do to help start that journey? You know, not complete it, not get to that ultimate utopian point, but just to start and yeah, make them first steps.
So I think all change work should really start in the mind with that question. So what are you wanting? What are you doing all this for? And get very, very clear on that. And I would ask, are you working towards something or are you working away from something? And getting very clear on that in your mind. And then ask yourself what assertions, you know, and assumptions you're sort of making in there. And then from the bat, from there, working with somebody that could really help you sort of explore the mind first, because ultimately it's, Jeff, if you think about what lots of people are looking for, confidence. People often weigh, I'll do this when I'm more confident. You know, I want to be more confident because of that. But confidence is just a perspective of the mind, really. It's almost, we are confident when we're not thinking unconfident thoughts. So it's the relationship that you have with the thinking that will create that leads you realizing you're already confident to do all the work. So it's all in the mind.
You're essentially saying confidence almost isn't a thing, but a lack of confidence is kind of.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is why the mind is the most important. This is not to say we don't need or shouldn't change things external to ourselves, but changing things external to ourselves, expecting to feel something differently. If we're getting confused between correlation and causation, then we might change all kinds of stuff, invest lots of time and money and energy, and end up in the same space, because that's not the problem. The problem is inside us. And the way that we see the world, we see ourselves and things like that.
Yeah, so making a big change, essentially, like doing, so it might be your career or where you live or big things like that, should are fine, but they need to be almost backed up by the other changes, the realization. Because, so, you know, probably a common example I would imagine people listening to this is they've been in a corporate job or in an employed role, not being happy, and gone and start their own business because they want to be happy. Now, there might be a bit of a short-term happiness element of that's fine, but they don't back it up by other changes. It is only going to be short-term. Again, yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is. So the way that I think about this is sort of asking yourself, you know, what's the motivation for wanting to change? And I have a way of thinking about it, which is this idea of a toxic goal. So a toxic goal is I'll be happy when, sort of, if only this. And this feeling that you should or you have to or you must do these things. And this is coming from a much more egoic state. It's the ego construct, you know, that part of us, which is the story we tell ourselves about ourselves, saying that we need to do this, if not, we won't be who we think we are or who we want to be or something like that. It's what I can't think of as just nonsense. But then there's an authentic desire, which is the other side of this, which is something that you feel compelled to do, but it's not to show off to yourself or anybody else. It feels like you want to do this for a different reason. And that can be quite difficult to articulate, but if you can just look inside you for a little while, you can see the difference. Do you know, it's a little bit like artwork. Do you know, art is often for its own sake. Do you know, you want to create something or do something almost for its own sake. It's got nothing to do with, you know, social stratification or anything else like that. Do you know, it's coming from a different place.
That makes sense, Robin. I think we could go on this subject forever, but one last question from me. I'm sure there's a lot of people really interested in the stuff that you do and how you do it. And if they are, where are the kind of best places to find you, to contact you, to look at what you do, what's the best things for them to do?
So there's two places that I would say off the bat. LinkedIn, that's the easiest place and where I post the most. But there's my website too, and I've got some free sort of some free course stuff on there, some free audios and some free videos. And then they can join sort of my mailing list as well, where I do some sort of coaching for free via email. That's what I think about it as well. They're the places to check me out. And yeah, anybody that's obviously wanting just a conversation, if they've enjoyed any of or are intrigued by anything that I've spoken about, just to reach out.
Well, that's the thing about, I think, about this conversation, Robin, is the reality is we're probably not, someone isn't going to change their life by listening to this half an hour or so conversation that we have. But again, kind of going back to the question I asked earlier, if it started that journey, and that journey might just be, it's in their mind now, and they might not do anything about it for 6-12 months or 18 months or 5 years or whatever it might be, and that's okay, because we all move at different paces, don't we? But hopefully it's got people thinking about themselves, and kind of, as we've mentioned a few times today, to get that ultimate aim of happiness, because that's what we're all here for, aren't we?
Ultimately, be happy. Yeah. So if anybody is, I think the first thing is, if you are clear that you've got something that you don't want and you want a different answer, that's the first recognition, and you've got to own that. I want a different answer, and I currently have.
Perfect. That's a fantastic place to finish, Robin. So I just want to say thank you for your knowledge, your expertise, your points. You've got me thinking. You probably saw me scribbling down notes during that conversation. So thank you. No, really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Mike. It's been loads of fun. Thank you, mate. Cheers.